What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Carolina Nick Say Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Palat. This week, we're discussing the College Football National Championship. We're discussing Alabama, their new quarterback, and what should happen to their old quarterback in Jalen Hurts, and whether he should join the Lane train and go to FAU. We talk the most meaningless weekend in all sports, according to Jim. We're talking wild card weekend in the NFL. We're talking Blake Bortles, the choke fest by Kansas City, and more. We discuss the ESPN story about the Patriots, or the so-called demise of the Patriots. We tend to think it is much to do about nothing. We talk the Time's Up movement, and we have a lengthy conversation on the problem with Oprah and why she should not be president. All that and more this week on the Carolina Nick Say Podcast. Today is January 9th, 2018. Jim, we got a lot to talk about, my man.
Yeah, how are you? I'm all right. I'm trying to limber up.
Yeah, I know.
Just give me a second.
I know last night was a lot for you. You know, we're recording this on a Tuesday night, the night after the national championship. What'd you think, Jim?
I thought it was a great game. I would say that it was the best final college football championship that I'd ever seen if the kid from Alabama had actually hit the field goal at the end. But so I can't say it's the greatest game, but it's right up there, man. It was pretty good.
I was really exciting. It's really funny because you and I texted throughout that whole game, and that first half was really just an ugly rock fight. And when Saban pulled out Jalen Hurts at the second half, or, you know, the start of the second half when a new quarterback comes in, I'm sitting there thinking, stick a fork in Saban. This dude is done.
I didn't think that. I really didn't. I know everyone's going to listen to this and go, oh, yeah, well, you know.
Well, you
don't say that, you know. I mean, you. I was texting you at
did,
the time.
You did say in our text. You did say, look, he can do something that, you know, the new quarterback. I can't ever pronounce his name.
Tua. Yeah, his first name's Tua. I can't pronounce his last.
You did note the fact that Tua could open the playbook more in ways that Jalen Hurts couldn't. I just really thought anytime you make a quarterback change, it's usually a sign of panic. But what do you know? Nick Saban is a tiny bit smarter than me.
Well, yeah, but I mean, also, it's not like it wasn't a little desperate. I mean, I don't want to oversell that. But I do think that if you pull your quarterback at halftime in a championship game, you know you got issues.
Yeah.
And I felt like they were very fortunate that they weren't down, you know, four touchdowns at that point. Because they, you know, it was only because of their phenomenal defense that they were even in the game after half. So I'm not, you know, it was definitely a sort of desperate move. But great coaches make desperate moves that work. And mediocre coaches make desperate moves that don't work.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's really the difference. It's really about Saban. Saban knew that there was no way they were going to beat Georgia's man-to-man. They got too much team speed. They're too good at rushing the quarterback. And it just wasn't going to work. And he also knew that Jalen Hurts can't make the throws.
And we talked about this 2 weeks ago after, you know, the original playoff. You know, between Clemson and Alabama, one of the things that we had noted, you had notably brought up, was the fact that, I know it wasn't saying much at the time, but it was still a relevant fact, Jalen Hurts was the weakest part of his team in that win over Clemson.
And he's a great kid. I don't want to, you know, you don't want to beat up on the kid, but
do you think he handled the benching well? I don't think that was PR. Like, that seemed very genuine.
No, I don't either. I think that was genuine. I think you have to be that way. I mean,
Saban, or in general?
No, just in general. He, you know, what are you going to do? You know, and it's not the first time this happened. I mean, I know everything's related to the Patriots. You know, Drew Bledsoe was a $100 million quarterback, got benched for a kid drafted in the sixth round.
Wait, Jim. Are we really going to talk about the Patriots right now? I mean, we got a whole segment dedicated to them.
Oh, would you stop? Just stop. You're just a hater. I'm sorry. Your Jets stink. There's nothing you can do your whole life. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, sometimes I wonder if this should be the Carolina Knicks Tape podcast or the Carolina or New England Celtic podcast. I mean, we got time for them later.
I'm sorry, man. We give win championships. What do you want me to tell you? I can't help you.
Give me an analogy that isn't related to New England, please.
Well, the point is, I think that if you're in his position, you have to know that you didn't have the skills necessary to win that game. And a loss, him losing the game, wouldn't help him at all anyway.
Yeah.
So not only does he seem like a good kid from a moral standpoint, from a rational standpoint, what is your other choice? Throw a hissy fit? You just stunk it up.
Well,
and that was evident, Aaron, on the very first play. When they came out, or the not the very first play, but the second series, the very first throw the kid made, I think it was the second series, they came out and he threw a slant over a 5-yard, 6-yard slant over the middle, right on the button.
Yeah.
That's a throw Hurts
that
can't
Jalen
make.
Jalen Hurts isn't going to make.
He can't make it.
I do think this. I do think Jalen Hurts does have I think he does have a real decision and a real choice to make right now. And Jim, I know you're going to hate me for this, but I think this only brings up my fact that I brought up a year ago, that I brought up weeks ago.
Oh, hooray for you. Just say it already.
Jalen Hurts' only option is to go to the man with the plan, the man that brought his career to essence. I'm talking Jalen Hurts to Florida Atlantic University.
Oh,
let's
God,
jump on
yeah,
the lane train, baby.
Please,
jump on the
stop.
Lane train.
Please make it stop.
I mean, seriously, though.
No, you know what he needs to do?
In all realism here, Jalen Hurts probably has lost his starting quarterback job at Alabama.
Doesn't mean he's lost a starting job.
Well, call it recency bias, call it whatever you want. He does not have the talent and skill that Tua does. So why not go to FAU and play for the man?
Slow down. You saw 30 minutes of football and you automatically know he's starting next August?
That guy?
I wouldn't start him in August based on 30 minutes of play in January. No. There's a whole training camp to go through and all that stuff. Let's just wait and see. Maybe Jalen Hurts goes home and goes, you know what? I'm in a little bit of trouble here. I better learn to throw the football. And he learns to throw it well enough that he can get away with it in the college game. Because that's really all we're talking about. Okay? He's not going to be an NFL quarterback. He might be an NFL tight end, but he's not an NFL quarterback. So all he has to do is go back and this offseason, and maybe he gets better. I don't know.
I think that all that is fine and dandy. You can go back to Alabama.
But you can't make a decision on starting him. Now, I do think he seems to demonstrate skills that not a lot of 18-year-olds in this world have. Okay? Mm-hmm. Like,
how many times did we hear he was a true freshman last night? I mean, seriously.
Like, I don't. I'm so sick of that. You know what? Age doesn't matter. It just doesn't. Some people got it and some people don't. Okay. You know, Jimmy Clausen doesn't have it.
No.
Didn't have it. Right. No. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. The kid made throws in situations where you go, okay, that's impressive. Not only is it an impressive throw, but it's impressive that he had the guts,
the onions, the cojones,
the intestinal fortitude or whatever to do that. And the throws I'm talking about is there were three throws in a row on that series I was talking about where he threw a 6-yard slant on the nose. Good coverage. Had to be a perfect throw. It was. Okay. Then he made another throw that was low and outside where only his guy could catch it with a defender on him. And then he made that third throw over the middle or down the field where you're going, okay, those are three throws in a row in the same series that Jalen Hurts hasn't made his whole life.
Yeah.
And so you combine that with the fact that he gives up a 16-yard sack and then throws a dime. Full speed, in stride, in the breadbasket, bang, touchdown to win the game. That was like, wow, okay, that was a great throw. And maybe he'll never make another throw that good in his whole life. But that was a great throw.
Listen, Jim.
So,
all this...
it looks like he has skills that exceed Jalen Hurts to a degree that you can then say, okay, Tua runs the ball well enough, not as well as Jalen Hurts, but well enough that we got to get this guy in.
Yeah.
Because he's a real quarterback.
And I listen – Call it overreactionary, whatever. Tua not only can throw dimes, not only has a cannon of an arm. I know he's not as elusive of a runner as Jalen Hurts, but when that kid puts his head down, he's barreling kids over. If I'm Jalen Hurts, the writing's on the wall. I'm sorry. You had a good time in Alabama. It's been fun. I think the writing is on the wall. And I don't think you do that, Aaron.
I think that's wrong.
I think you have to. Because this is why. All jokes aside. I think, especially if you're looking at the way the SEC works, the way that college football works, he's only going to have a limited time to decide whether he wants to leave or not. We understand sometimes, well, especially in the SEC, you lose a year of eligibility if you transfer to another SEC school. And I don't know. I don't know what Jalen Hurts has in his mind. You and I have spoken time and time again how most of these guys think they are the best of the best on the planet, whether they think they're going to get to the NFL or not.
I don't think he does.
You don't think so?
No, I think he knows that there are limits to his game, especially demonstrated by the fact that you got pulled at halftime of the national championship game after you've gone, 25-2 in the last 2 years or something like that?
He might just think Nick Saban's a jerk.
No, please. The whole world saw that for what it was, including Jalen Hurts, was that he couldn't win the game. If you know that you can't win the game under certain circumstances.
And why do you play, Jim?
Because we're not talking about a one-trick pony here, okay? It's not Jimmy Clausen, okay? We're talking about a guy with athletic gifts that could translate to something else. So maybe what he does, if he doesn't get very, very good at throwing the ball very, very quickly, maybe what he does is he goes in and meets with, Saban, and he says, okay, well, how about, running back / tight end. I'm the backup quarterback.
You think he takes the Braxton Miller route? Remember Braxton Miller when he was the backup quarterback a few years ago at Ohio State, yep. and they had the emergence of Cardale Jones and JT Barrett.
Well, Braxton Miller's a great example of that. But I think Jalen Hurts is a better athlete than Braxton Miller.
Man, Braxton was good. Braxton was a real good athlete.
I agree, but I think Jalen Hurts. I mean, I just think, especially in this NFL, if he wants to play it, I think that body as a tight end, with the speed and elusiveness he has, I think that's the way to go. People are talking about him as a wide receiver, and that's fine too. There are bigger wide receivers, but.
Give me a percentage before we move on. Percentage that Lane Kiffin has already dropped in the DMs of Jalen Hurts to recruit him.
Oh, that's 100%. That's 100%. Because he's a douche with a capital D.
He is dropped.
So that's fine.
He's dropped in those DMs. All right, Jim. Two quick questions for you. First and foremost, do you think Georgia will be a team to reckon with next year? And then second, do you think this secures Nick Saban as the best college football coach ever?
Oh, I don't know about either of those things. I mean, who knows year to year? I mean, you would expect Georgia to be better next year because Fromm will be a sophomore. And he played well last night.
He did play well.
He made a couple bad throws. I thought that
pick was fluky.
It was. I think they left points on the field in the first half. I really do. I mean, and giving up the interception the first series. I mean, he did come back from that. So you can't complain too much about his play. But I do think he'll be a better as a sophomore, and he's certainly skilled enough to make a difference in the college game. We'll see how good he gets.
What do you think about Saban though? Do you think this really puts him in the wrong?
We need to talk to Smitty about that or something. I have our buddy Smitty. I am not an authority on that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't.
Everybody wants to compare him to Bear Bryant for the obvious reasons.
I know.
But
I don't.
The
don't
game
know
is so different now.
Yeah, I mean, it's much more competitive now. Bear Bryant won a national championship at Kentucky. I mean, it was a different era, a different game.
Okay.
So I don't know if you can.
You didn't take,
I've always said this about football, haven't I? You can't really compare across eras.
No, it's not like basketball where, you seemingly can, even though it's a little tougher, you can compare a little different. But
it's closer.
I was in Arizona last week for work, and I was sitting next to this lovely older couple who was there to see one of the bowl games in Arizona. And she said, "We're from Texas." I said, "Oh, yeah." She said, "My husband used to play quarterback at Texas Tech in the late 1990s. 1960s. I said, what position did you play? He said, I played quarterback. He said, I was 150 at the time. I said, 150? I said, that's not even a slot receiver right now. He's like, yeah, please. The game is completely different. He's like, I wouldn't even walk on the field now.
Well, I mean, yeah. And those, I've talked about that kind of stuff before. Paul Hornung, who's the golden boy, who's in the Hall of Fame, who's on all those great Green Bay Packer teams, right? He ran a 4.8 out of the backfield.
Yeah, I could probably.
I mean, he wouldn't even get on
now.
The field. He couldn't even get on the field as a defensive lineman.
Yeah,
running that slow now.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, it's a different game. I think the best. I mean, of all the sports, really, the best comparisons are across baseball. I think because the game is essentially the same.
Even though people have gotten bigger, larger, stronger in every capacity.
Right, but the dimensions and all that seems to be, like, at least post-World War II, which at this point is, you know, whatever, 70 years, you can look at those numbers and you can compare with some obvious differences, like they lowered the mound at one point and then they raised it, or they raised it and then lowered it. You know, parks got smaller for a while, then they got bigger.
And now they're small like Yankee Stadium, which I love.
And now they're small. Yeah, it's very weird. You know, when I was growing up, Fenway Park was a home run park.
When was that? When was that? 1912?
Yeah, 1912. And then it was last century, son. We went through this phase of small ballparks or home run ballparks, and all of a sudden Fenway Park's like middle of the road for home runs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
I want to move on to college football. I mean, not college football, to the NFL. In what you call the most pointless weekend in all of sports across the board. Most meaningless
weekend of sports.
We've seen a lot of things, or not a lot of things. We saw Atlanta beat a young Los Angeles Rams team. We saw Carolina with no wide receivers and a disregard for Cam Newton's health lose to New Orleans. We saw Tennessee actually pull off the commonality in Kansas City as Kansas City chokes and loses to Tennessee Titans.
They choked. That was a choke.
I mean,
they choke so hard. They're still choking.
Yeah, Kansas.
They're blue.
I think Kansas City has actually passed out. I think they wrapped their hands around their necks and choked in what probably is going to be Alex Smith's last game. And
Aaron, that was so bad. It wasn't even his fault. I mean, I just don't get that.
You made a really good comparison that I heard Jim Rome speaking about this morning. Now that he's on CBS Sports Network, he basically called Andy Reid the new Marty Schottenheimer.
I said that on Sunday. I didn't think that was a stretch.
It's really not. You have the number one running back in all of the NFL. Probably the best rookie, and I mean, he's top 10 in total yards, too, in Kareem Hunt. Why aren't you running the ball more down people's throats when you have a guy in Alex Smith who, based off of the offense that you were running in the last few weeks of the regular season, we saw Alex Smith return to who he was in the early part of the season. We know he's not going to turn the ball over.
Because they were running the ball.
Yeah, but the other thing I'm confused by is that Alex Smith is not going to turn the ball over. Like, that's just not who he is.
No, it isn't. And here's the thing with that. This is what drives me crazy with this. First of all, I think it was Rodney Harrison was talking about this, where he said, you know, these West Coast teams, they want to script 15 plays, and they look great for 15 plays, and then they get off script.
Yeah.
Right? And Tony Dungy, who's trying to be nice to everybody, is kind of nodding his head going, that's the problem. That's a problem. And, like, to me, I'm going, okay, let's say, you know, Travis Kelce is a huge loss. Because he's probably the most important person on that offense.
He's the second best tight end in all of the league.
Exactly, and Alex Smith is, you know, he's only good because he has that kind of a weapon. You know what I'm saying? So, and a great runner. So you lose Travis Kelce. I know, understand that's a huge loss, but you don't throw the ball more. Okay, that's exactly the opposite of what you should be doing. You have a lead in a playoff game. Run the ball. You're at home.
Yeah, and it was ugly for it was ugly for the Tennessee Titans, who basically, they did not look like they wanted to win that game. Oh, it's actually funny because if you look at Marcus Mariota, I mean, I would have to take a look at the box score. The man blocked for his wide receivers. The man did everything.
Caught a touchdown.
Yeah, he did everything.
Threw and caught a touchdown.
That's what I'm saying.
The same one.
He did everything he could by running the ball on the floor. And like you said, he played quarterback and wide receiver on the same play.
Why can't my quarterback during the regular season of fantasy do that? Wouldn't that be great?
It would be fantastic if I could get a double score.
Yeah, that's what I'm right.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. It would be. You know, you would actually have to like kind of like you would have to like triple it.
No, because Tennessee looked like they were just. I mean,
they look
like you say they did not want to win the game, and Kansas City wouldn't let them lose.
Well, it's all good. They're gonna go get. They're gonna go get slack next week by New England. I want to talk.
Yes, they are, unless Tom turns the ball over.
Before I get to Golden Boy Tommy, I want to talk somebody who is the antithesis of Tom Brady and Blake Bortles.
Don't you think that the Kansas City loss is just the most? Doesn't that epitomize the weekend?
Yeah, I think it's the most Kansas City thing, and I think it does summarize Wild Card Weekend, where it's like, oh, football is on, but like, what are we doing here?
From what I saw, there is one legitimate team that came out of that weekend.
The Saints.
Only the Saints. Now, with a footnote, Jacksonville can play defense in a way that they can beat anybody.
I'm going to go in a different direction.
But when I say play defense, I mean they got to turn the offense over like four times to win.
Okay, so I'm going to go in a different direction than you because I actually thought that the Atlanta win over Los Angeles was a bit more impressive than Jacksonville beating up on a concussed Tyrod Taylor and Nathan Peterman.
I couldn't disagree more.
Listen,
Atlanta
Blake
is
Bortles,
fool's gold. I said it a year ago. I'm saying it again. They're fool's gold.
Okay, so
every year.
So the reason why I buy into the Atlanta win is because now seemingly they have the easiest route to the NFC Championship and possibly the Super Bowl. They're taking on Nick Foles and the Eagles next.
Yeah, but
week,
Nick
Jim.
Foles isn't scared like Goff is.
I couldn't say that if I saw Nick Foles in his last regular season game. The dude didn't know how to. I want somebody to hold me the way that Nick Foles holds on to the ball under pressure. The dude doesn't throw the ball away.
Yeah, true. I want someone to hold me like Jalen Hurts and Nick Foles hold the ball.
Oh, my God.
That would be
God.
Great. Listen to me. I understand what you're saying, okay? But this is a home playoff game in Philadelphia, okay? They do play defense.
Stick a
they
fork
do.
In them. That cockfight is already decided.
I'm telling you, Atlanta is fool's gold. Even if they come out of this weekend – what you're saying is you can see them going to – I think they'll be going to the Vikings, but you can see them going to the Vikings or going to New Orleans and winning?
I can't see them getting past Minnesota, but maybe New Orleans. Not Minnesota.
Okay. Well, see, I don't think – I told you this over the weekend. I think there's only one legitimate team in the NFC.
Case Keenum?
I really do.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I know. It's crazy.
Okay. Have fun.
The world is upside down. You've Oprah Winfrey is running for president,
and we're gonna get to that later. But you're telling me that you just told me two things. A, you think Case Keenum is a part of the most dangerous team in the NFC, and then second, you're telling me that Jalen Ramsey is as impressive as he is, and as much as I like him, you're telling me that Jalen Ramsey and the Jaguars defense is impressive, even though their quarterback ran more than he threw the ball because he can't throw the ball. Blake Bortles is bad, Jim. And we know
no,
this is a quarterback league.
No, what you, no, that was a very, very impressive use of rhetorical fallacy twice in the same sentence. So allow me to retort. Oh, you were finished.
No, go ahead.
I never said any of those things. What
because
I said
it sounds like you like Blake Bortles.
What I said was, well, no, it sounds like that because you're putting it through your filter and spitting it out as a logical fallacy and then trying to hammer it home by saying a team is equivalent to a player, which it's not. So you're all over the place. It's very good. Dr. Griffiths would love this. So listen, here's the thing. I didn't say any of that. What I said is there's one legitimate team in the NFC, and it's the Vikings.
Okay.
I didn't say they were the most dangerous team or they were this or that. They're the one legitimate team because they can play defense, they're at home, and their offense works. It's not hit or miss. It just isn't. Okay? So that's the first thing. The second thing is I said with a footnote for the Jaguars because of their defense, which is elite.
It is. It is very
and,
elite.
And I said if they turn the ball over four times, that's how they win. But that's what I mean by that. That defense is capable of that. Do I think they're going to do that? Am I going to predict them to beat Pittsburgh? No. But I would not be surprised if something like that happens. So that's what I actually said. So when I say that on this side of the world, that's different than what you're saying I said on that side of the world.
It just sounded like you – it just sounded like you were all in
on
Blake Bortles.
You just – I know. How am I all in on Blake Bortles? I said the Jacksonville Jaguars because of how they play defense. What position does Blake Bortles play?
Well, he turns the ball over.
Yeah, the silence is
that. No.
He just pick offense or defense. What does he play? Does he play defense? I'm pretty sure he doesn't.
He practically plays for the defense because he always puts him on the field.
And I'm saying that's a good thing.
Okay.
That's exactly who you want on the field if you're Jacksonville. Defense.
You know what I do like about the Jaguars defense? You know, I already sort of hammered it home with Jalen Ramsey, but Jalen Ramsey is all in on playing the Steelers. I mean, did you see his comments? Big Ben said when Big Ben said, "Yeah, we want to play the Jaguars." Jalen Ramsey said, "Yeah, I would want to play us again too if I were him." We had 5 picks after the game. I think he was contemplating retirement.
Yeah, I don't care. Here's the thing. That's exactly what happened, right? So, you know, whatever. There's not a lot of Hall of Fame quarterbacks that threw 5 picks in a game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe there are some, but you know, that's you got to own that if you're Pittsburgh. What I'm saying is, what I will say is this: if of all the teams left in the playoffs, right, you know, Pittsburgh is prone to those kinds of games.
They really are.
Where they just wing it around or they fumble it 3 times. You know what I mean? Like, or whatever. So I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to be fine because I agree with you. The Jaguars offense is horrendous. I mean, the best you can hope for is that Bortles doesn't throw more than 1 pick. I mean, that really is the best you can hope for. And that, you know, you're able to run against the Pittsburgh defense, which traditionally this season that has been the case. I mean, Leonard Fournette had a big game against them, among others.
Yeah. And listen, it's not like the Steelers haven't done this before. It was just 7 years ago that your Lord and Savior, Tim Tebow, you know, he beat the Steelers.
Yeah, well, that was just a fluke. I mean, we all know that was a fluke. I mean, the Steelers were good. I don't want to say they were bad on defense. They weren't. And they were a good rushing defense. But, you know, a great back like Leonard Fournette. I mean, obviously not every team has a Leonard Fournette. So, could he run for 130 yards? Would that be enough with the defense playing elite to beat Pittsburgh? Yeah, I think that's the case.
Yeah,
I think that's the case in a way that it wouldn't be if Jacksonville was going to New England this weekend.
No, and listen, that's a perfect segue.
Because the Patriots aren't going to give them the ball the way the Steelers might.
Well, it's a perfect segue because you bring up New England, and listen, I don't know. After this explosive Breitbart-esque story from ESPN last week, I don't know if the Patriots are going to win another game, Jim. I mean,
yeah, I know.
I mean, ESPN comes out and reports last week.
Well, they've definitely been trending down.
You know, ESPN comes out with this story last week basically saying, you know, basically pointing out the internal power struggle between Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and owner Robert Kraft. And in other news, water is wet as alpha males don't always get along, Jim.
Oh, I don't. There's nothing here.
I mean,
there's absolutely nothing here.
I mean, I was gonna bring up the Nesson story, basically saying how, you know, Nesson came out with an article 2 days ago, basically saying how America has to stop pretending that the Patriots or New England has to stop pretending that the Patriots could have kept Jimmy Garoppolo and Tom Brady after Garoppolo turned down 2 contracts.
Oh, please. He turned down, you know, $17 million a year, and that's a lot of money. I get that. Because what he wanted was assurances that for the 4-year contract that he was signing the $17 or $18 million a year for, you know, for 3 of those years, he wasn't going to be sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
Okay, so I understand.
But my point is, all of that makes obvious sense. Like none of this right. is a story. All of this is a non-story because Jimmy obviously wasn't going to stay. And even if he did stay for that amount of money, Tom Brady's owed $22 million next year, and you still have four or five real free agents you need to sign on that team. There's a non-story here if from a team structural standpoint. But I don't want to talk about that. I do want to ask you, because you are a diehard New England fan, and you have paid very close attention to Bill Belichick. You and I have spoken about this throughout the years. You've had different theories on this. Tell me why there is a non-story here with the fact that Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, and Tom Brady might not always get along.
Well, you're right. I mean, I think the very nature of the sport requires a bit of an acrimonious sort of relationship between those three folks, because everyone has to be better. You know, everybody has to do better. And you know, pats on the bum don't always get it. Okay. So I don't think that's a story. I mean, Bill Belichick is the devil. No one gets along with him. You know what I mean? So I don't think that's a story. Do I think Tom Brady at 40 years old is probably tired of being lit up in the meeting rooms because he's the only Hall of Famer in the room at the time? You know, I mean, yeah, I think he probably is tired of that. But at the same time, you know, Steve Young used to tell the story all the time about, you know, when, you know, someone asked him, when he did you know that you didn't want to play anymore? Not that you couldn't, but you didn't want to play anymore. And he said, well, it was like I was in the locker room for pregame or something, and we were getting our rah-rah speech, and I'm standing there in, you know, watching all this going, really, guys? Is this what it takes for, you know, like, I mean, we're adults, man. Like, so I think that is probably more indicative of where Tom is at 40 years old, in that he's like, okay, I'm super competitive. I don't need this foolishness.
Yeah.
No.
I don't need all this foreplay to get it up, Jim.
Exactly. So do I think there might be some of that? Yeah, probably. But look, this is
a non-story.
It's a non-story. Garoppolo's played six games. Six NFL games. Slow down.
I know San Francisco has fallen in love, but it's only been six games.
It's six games. You know, is he going to the Hall of Fame? Who knows? I don't even know if he's better than Mark Rippon right now. Mark Rippon won a Super Bowl.
I can tell you I can tell you what, you know, I can tell you what is competitive. Jimmy Garoppolo is damn good looking.
Yeah, he's a handsome guy. That's probably why Tom wanted him gone.
That's a good looking guy.
Here's what I think happened. Okay. I do think that Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft met to discuss the Brady situation, because this is unlike any other player situation that he's ever had before.
Almost ever.
Ever. I'm sure that happened. I'm sure that Kraft said, we're not cutting Brady. We're not trading him. He's retiring as a Patriot, period, the end. Because he's done what no other quarterback's done. And Kraft is not going to have Tom Brady playing for Kansas City next year, like Joe Montana, right? It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I think Belichick has gotten to the point where he's like, look,
this has to stop at some point.
It has to stop at some point. What are we going to do? Now, I think the reason he only got a second round pick had more to do with how Belichick feels about Lynch and Kyle Shanahan,
yes,
and how he feels about Jimmy Garoppolo than it does about getting the best that he can get.
So
he could have probably gotten Cleveland's pick.
I mean, the Jets probably would have given up two first rounders.
They'll do it right now. But I mean, but
he has a good relationship with Shanahan. He probably respects Garoppolo.
He only trades players he doesn't like to the Cleveland Browns. Okay. Like the who is the linebacker, escapes my name, that he traded, you know, like mid season. He's like, all right, you're not following your directions.
Bye.
You're done. So, you know, he traded Richard Seymour to Oakland
when they weren't good, for anybody with recency bias.
Right. Because Seymour wouldn't take a pay cut. So that's different. I mean,
that's petty.
Right. He sends, and it's who he is. It's just who he is. He likes Garoppolo. He sent him to a good position. He got a second round pick. He's done with it. He's moved on. And now he knows that he's going to draft a quarterback in this draft. That's what that tells me. That's what he has decided to do. He's going to pick a quarterback that he wants somewhere in this draft. And so, and I mean that by not like, I'm not filling the roster out. I'm going to pick a guy. I'm going to go get a guy that I want. I would think.
I think you bring up a very valuable point. And I think that, you know, again, you know, I had a real.
But that doesn't mean the team's coming apart.
No.
I guess. Right.
And, you know, okay. And ultimately, you know, because, I didn't really want to harp on it too long. You know, I had a hard time reading this ESPN article because it just felt like it was grasping at thin air. And then really at the end of the day, you know, I don't really have a good analogy for it. But it's like if this is what dysfunction looks like after what? Almost 20 years. Give me dysfunction. Because if this is dysfunction, I have no idea what the Browns and what the Jets are because you guys have gotten almost 6 titles out of this. What are we doing?
You're so right. You're so right about this because I don't understand. Like, so I forget. What did he say? Seth said that he talked to like a dozen personnel and players. Is that what it was?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Well, just think about that for a second. There's 53 men on the active roster. There's, you know, another group of people, what is it, 5 or 6 on the practice squad or something like that, mm-hmm. right? How many personnel are there on that team on a daily basis that are in and around the team, right? There's got to be 30 people.
Yeah.
Employed by the Patriots that are around that team in at all times. You're talking about 100 people or so. And then you're, you know, other personnel that are always around. And you're saying you talk to a dozen people and you think you know the lay of the land inside that locker room?
Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was ridiculous. And
sounds like it is exactly what you said it was. It's long on conjecture and short on evidence.
Honestly, I mean, really. And again, some of this, you know, and again, you know, I don't want to harp on it forever, but it's like some of this makes sense. Like, you know, Tom Brady having a trainer in there, him having all this power. At some point, Belichick, at some point, you got to all be
He's
on the same
piss
page.
Him off.
But I'm just not even from like a petty standpoint, but from an organizational structure standpoint, you can't have too many chefs in the kitchen. You can't.
And
have,
Alex Guerrero, by the looks of it, he doesn't come off smelling good no matter how you look at this.
I mean, your boy Tom Brady is on the Russell Wilson program over here saying
exactly.
That. I mean,
that's exactly right.
As great as Tom Brady is, some of this stuff is
snake oil. There's no question.
Some of this stuff is out
there. And as long as he can throw touchdowns, I don't give a crap.
And
I really don't.
And honestly,
I'm not cheering for him because I subscribe to his, you know,
but
neo-conservative ideology where he's. And he's peddling crap.
And
but there
think,
is something to be said for what Giselle, I think it was Giselle tweeted out, right?
Yeah.
And she probably did it in a snide, you know, elitist way. But every, you know, blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while. She you know, when she tweeted out, the lions are rarely concerned with the opinions of sheep.
Cool.
Well, yeah, that kind of sucks for you to say, but it's true.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I'm saying?
No,
it's true.
No, I get
it. In this case, it's true.
No, I get it. I'm not trying to take shots at my former employer, but it's just like, dude, you put a lot of time into a story that really did nothing. All you did was show me was, okay, there might be some minor structural disagreements in an organization that has built a dynasty in the modern era.
Well, good. At least they've improved from the days of Deflategate then.
Oh, God. I mean,
where there was no basis for that. Spygate.
This isn't.
Where the conjecture went long and the evidence went short. Okay. And all they ever were convicted of.
All they were ever
punished for was having a camera in a place that wasn't legally sanctioned by the NFL.
We get it. The Patriots are habitual line steppers and it's not crossing the line.
Like everybody
as
else.
As long as you habitually get
Give
there.
Me a break.
I'm not criticizing it. All I'm saying is we get it. I do.
This is ridiculous. It's just a non-story. Listen, when you're the best team, everybody loves to hate you. I saw this with the Cowboys.
Listen.
There was Cowboy Nation, and then there was like, you know, 70% of the world that just absolutely hated the Cowboys.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown. I'll tell you what, though, Jim.
I'll tell you what. You know what is exciting? Spider 2 Y Banana is back, baby.
What are you doing? What is that? A Boston accent? Is that what you're going for there?
That's Gruden, baby. Gruden is back. 10 years.
Good night. It sounds like you got too much Novocaine in your mouth.
That's how Gruden talks, man. That's how Gruden talks.
No, it isn't. That was nothing like Gruden talks.
That was a good Spider Y 2 Banana impression of John Gruden.
Have you noticed that his TV appearances in the last few days, he's doing the Chucky face more?
Yes.
Have you noticed that?
I have.
He's purposely doing the Chucky face. I know he is.
Listen, when you're on your way out, you can do anything you want. You and I talked time and time again over the last 2 years. John Gruden had it good.
Did you witness that sloppy love fest farewell broadcast between him and Sean McDonough?
Who've been together a year.
It's been two years. I think this is the second year.
Yeah, it's been a magical.
Oh my God, Sean McDonough, come up for air.
It's been a magical 2 years. And listen, if Sean McDonough wants.
Listen, I'm not judging. Live your life, but good God, don't do it in front of everybody, please.
Hey, all I request is that you wipe your mouth. That's all I request.
Come on now. Come on, clean it up. Clean it up.
Is John Gruden worth $100 million, Jim?
I think everyone's worth $100 million.
I mean, if somebody's willing to pay, I think you're worth whatever somebody's willing to buy.
I don't know. I think it's great that he sucked $100 million out of Al Davis's mongrel genealogy.
Talk about hustle.
I think it's great.
Talk about a hustle. $10 million.
I mean, that's a lot for an NFL coach, dude.
Largest ever.
That's a lot of money. It's what we talked about. I mean, if it's going to work, it has to work here.
Oh, with all the weapons he's
got coming back, theoretically.
And you have a legitimate quarterback. You have a legitimate quarterback in Derek Carr. I'm not calling him great. I'm not calling him a Hall of Famer. But you have a legitimate talent in Derek Carr.
I agree. I think Gruden's going to come out and run some updated version of the West Coast.
He's calling offenses in his first year.
Yeah, and they're going to get – I think there's going to be a lot of run and shoot from the Raiders next year.
I hope his wide receivers can catch.
Well, there's no guarantee.
I hope his wide receivers can catch. I will say I did respect the hustle of John Gruden stealing the money out of ESPN's pocket year in, year in, year in, year. And damn, did he outdo himself? You got to leave for $100 million.
It's going to be interesting, Aaron. Do you think – I mean, because I legitimately – he's going to go to three-step drops with this offense.
He has to.
And so the question is, the problem with that is you definitely, like Michael Crabtree probably has good enough hands to play in that kind of an offense. Amari Cooper, excuse me, Toomer. I do that every time. Amari Cooper hasn't demonstrated that he can run a six-yard slant four times a game and make the catch.
Yeah, but I don't know if he'll be asked to do that. You said he's going to run an updated version of the West Coast offense. You know, Cooper just isn't that guy. But what Cooper can do and what he does show flashes of is, separating from his defenders. And when he does pop up with the hands, he does it really, really well, Jim.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, he had one game this season. I mean, he had one game.
Yeah, after a dynamic 2016-17 season.
So he's got to get it together.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. I am interested. I do think – I'm not gonna make predictions like some people are saying. Do they get to the Super Bowl? Blah 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 blah.
Who knows about that? They got to fix some stuff on defense too.
I do think they are in a significantly better position than they were a year ago with Jack Del Rio. And maybe I have sipped some of the Kool-Aid, a lot of the Kool-Aid when it comes to Gruden. But if Gruden has anything of the offensive genius, anything left in him, I'll take that over Del Rio, and that's no shot at Del Rio, who had a great 2 years.
Well, they got to be healthy. They're going to need a running back because Marshawn Lynch apparently isn't coming back. I mean, at least that's what they were saying yesterday. I agree with you that the potential is there, but potential doesn't cash any checks,
and it sure does have an expiration date if you don't cash in.
Yeah, so I mean, Derek Carr's got to stay healthy.
Because he wasn't healthy this year.
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. And so there's going to be, but you know, that offense that Gruden wants to run is predicated at least partly on keeping the quarterback up right by doing three-step drops and getting the ball out quick, et cetera. So, you know, it'll be fun to see. I am, you know, sure than not that it probably will work. I mean, I think the over-under is 11-5 for that team next year.
Good. I like it. I'm glad you're on board the hype train, Jim.
Yeah, but I don't know about a Super Bowl.
Bigger hype train for you.
I want to see Alex Smith in a Jacksonville Jaguar uni next year. I want to see.
Those are fighting words. Do you think Blake Bortles is going to stand by and not let you watch him throw five picks and give the job to Alex Smith? How dare you? How dare you, Jim?
I know. How does Andy Reid still have a job?
Because consistency will buy you a lot, even if it's consistent to the extent of getting knocked out of the playoffs. Listen, if 9-7
isn't consistent to me. Listen, I mean, I don't know.
If Marv Lewis can consistently keep a job year after year,
Andy Reid certainly can.
Bigger hype train for you, Jim.
Do you think that he needs to give up the play calling? Yes, I mean, I think he does. 1,000%.
Right? I think that time is done.
Because he just gets way off script.
Well, not only has the play calling gotten bad. I think it doesn't help when the play calling has fallen off. But then also the biggest knock on Andy Reid has always been that he has been a poor game manager, and I just don't think those things add up as you continue to move on in the same sort of way. If he was not a bad game manager or a iffy game manager, I would say, okay, I can still give it to him, but you can't have both of these pile on one another.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. I think that,
damn dog. I mean, you're just agreeing with me on everything.
I am. Yeah. I'm tired. You've worn me out.
I will say this. I agree with you on one thing. Snatch was a good movie.
I knew you'd like that.
Snatch was a good
it
movie.
It was, right?
It was a good movie. I'm going to tell you this, too.
Is Bricktop not the scariest villain of all time?
It was a really good movie. And I, you know, when we get to the end with Jason Statham and Brad Pitt, you know, Brad Pitt in the final, you know, boxing match, I was sitting there wondering the whole time, like, dude, Brad Pitt has really taken on his mother being murdered very, very well. Like, for this dude who's a psycho, like, he's taken on really well.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Turns out
that was phenomenal. How about the dog running around with the flipping
the diamond and the ball?
Oh, my God. Yeah. And that 5 minutes on screen for Benicio Del Toro is pure gold.
Oh, God. I love Del Toro.
I want more Benicio Del Toro. Yep. I really do.
Then you need to go see Sicario. That's what you need to see.
I know. I've got to catch that. I know. I've been trying to. It's on Amazon, I'm pretty sure.
Sicario.
I do have to watch.
So, look, I fulfilled my side of the deal. I watched Snatch. You need to go watch Rick and Morty, and you need to watch Sicario.
All right. I know I can get Sicario done.
Oh, it's
I
great.
Know I can do that.
It's fantastic. If you love Benicio Del Toro, you will love Sicario.
Yeah. No, I'm a huge Benicio Del Toro fan. And that movie was – they had such great – the other guy that plays the cop all the time.
Oh, I know you're talking about. I can't think of his name.
What the heck's his name?
I did like this.
Dennis Farina.
Oh, yes.
Dennis Farina.
Yes. I did like the 6-degree effect, how they all were connected, but you really didn't get to see it until the middle of the movie. You were right there. You were right on that, and you were also right about Lamar Jackson leaving the college game. I did want to throw that in there for you because I was feeling generous. That's not what I want to talk about, Jim. That's
best line from that movie. It's the trailer. Is it not the trailer?
Yeah.
It's tip top. I just don't know if I like the color.
Yeah, pulls the door off.
Turkish. That was incredible. I'm sorry. I digress.
I want to ask you about, you know, a hype train that you obviously have jumped on board with John Gruden, but I was going to ask
choo-choo.
You, are you ready for another hype train?
I'm on a train. Choo choo.
Are you ready for the hype
Where's
train?
Rosie?
Are you ready?
Where's Rosie?
Are you ready for the
See,
hype train?
You don't
train?
Even get that reference. You don't even get that reference.
Listen, man. I don't get references from the 50s.
It's Soul Train. It's not the 50s. It's the 70s. Good God. You just don't. You just, you can't even use my words with you. Come on.
I'm sorry. But
Rosie Perez.
Now, I will say this. A quick
Rosie
story.
Perez, she started as a dancer.
I know she did.
I can't even.
You want to actually know a fun connection that I have with Rosie
Your dad
Perez?
Is rolling his eyes and shaking his head.
I love Rosie Perez. I swear to you. Puerto Rican and from Brooklyn, that's my type of
That's
girl.
What I'm saying. How could you not know this?
I'm about to give you a cool story on that. So when I was born... When I was born, my parents used to go walking through Park Slope. They used to go walking through parts of Brooklyn. And they said that they used to have weekend brunches at the same restaurant with Spike Lee and Rosie Perez. And my mom would always say, who's the loud Puerto Rican chick? And my dad, who is Puerto Rican, would be like, yo, that's Rosie Perez. That's Boricua right there.
She still asks that, but now the answer's you.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
That's a great story.
Yeah, man. They used to
no
take,
kidding.
Yeah.
Rosie Perez.
Always loves to bring it up. Did you know Rosie Perez? Actually, she was a, quick tangent about her. She was the one who actually discovered J-Lo because she was the choreographer.
Did I know that? I did know that. Yeah, Living Color.
Yeah, she was the choreographer. And she.
Absolutely.
She
J-Lo
actually,
was on Living Color.
She picked out J-Lo and Sean. And Keenan Ivory Wayne said, they said, we don't want her. And Rosie was like, this girl has it. Like, she has to cut her hair a little bit, but she has it. And they turned her down. And when they actually came back to New York for the second auditions, Rosie demanded that they picked J-Lo.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally remember this now.
Puerto Ricans looking out for one another. It's a beautiful thing.
I had Living Color on the other day. What channel are they on? They were showing reruns of In Living Color.
I think they're on FX.
It might have been FX. And I was watching some of it, and, some of it's funny. There's a lot of humor in that show that just doesn't translate. No. Like, some of the 90s humor is just –
It just doesn't work. It doesn't stay with the time.
It doesn't work.
But it was great. It was great for then, and the fashion was incredible.
And Jamie Foxx and Tommy Davidson.
Tommy Lee Davidson, Jim Carrey.
No, just Tommy Davidson. Tommy Lee Davidson. Right. Who
Sorry.
Are you?
I'm thinking of Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. No, not Tommy Lee Jones. The other Tommy.
Yeah. 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 The black one.
The black one. The one that doesn't have a face that looks like someone tried to put a fire out on it with a pitchfork.
Yeah. Yeah. Touche.
That guy.
Touche. Wasn't a great Cormac McCarthy movie, though. No Punches Old Men.
Yeah, he was. That was one of my favorite Tommy Lee movies, right there.
It's a good one. It's a really
that's
good
a great
movie.
Movie. Yeah, isn't it interesting? Like, some movies are great, and then the performances can almost be separated from them and say, yeah, they were great too.
Yes,
you know what I mean. Like, and then it goes the other way too. For instance, the movie Heat. You've seen that, right? The bank robbery movie.
It's the best bank robbery movie ever.
It's a great movie, but Al Pacino is in it.
Yes.
And Al Pacino's a legendary actor, but Al Pacino doesn't make a lot of really good movies anymore.
No.
And hasn't for a long time. And Heat is old too, but his performance is okay, and he's in a great movie, but it's not great because of him.
No.
It's kind of sad in a way, right? It's great because of Tom Sizemore and Val Kilmer and Robert De Niro. And Amy, what is it? Amy Brenneman, I think is in it. Yeah. What's her name?
It's the best heist movie ever. Ashley Judd?
Ashley Judd was fantastic in it, yeah. So, yeah, it's a great heist movie, but it's interesting how, that movie, similarly, you can look at some of the performances in that movie and go, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
And the movie was great.
Oh, perfect movie. Speaking of movies.
Not Al Pacino, though.
No, not great. not great at all. Speaking of movies, entertainment, television, the Golden Globes were this Sunday, and the big thing...
Good segue. Natalie Portman was in Heat also.
Yes. Young one. Young Natalie.
Very young. Yep.
Who had some really, really, great segue comments in the Golden Globes, but the biggest theme of the Golden Globes this year...
Did you like what she said?
I did.
I thought it was pretentious.
Okay, so
I don't want to hear it.
So
go ahead, say what she said.
So we're gonna
because I don't want to. She's standing there with Ron Howard.
Yeah,
and they're introducing the nominees for Best Director.
Yep, And basically, before they go to introduce it, Natalie Portman says, and here are all the male nominees. Ron Howard gives an awkward laugh. And none of the directors want to clap once their faces on screen.
Yeah, but all the liberals in the house are going, oh, isn't that wonderful? Clap.
So here's my thing. Before we get to the Time's Up movement, which I have some respect for, I have respect for the concept of what it's trying to do.
Yeah, but I want you to finish on Natalie Portman.
Yeah, so I would agree. I agree with Natalie Portman on a movie standpoint. Now, mind you, I have not seen The Post, but I have seen oh my God, my mind is going blank right now. Lady Bird. Have seen Lady Bird and Wonder Woman, two of the biggest movies of the year. Greta Gerwig, who directed Lady Bird, and Patty Jenkins, who directed Wonder Woman, who arguably two of the biggest blockbusters of the year, weren't nominated. So from a movie standpoint, I'm all for it. From a spotlight moment, in the sense of, all right, I'm here for me, it did feel a little bit like I'm going to get my point across. You understand what I'm saying?
I totally do. And so here's my thing.
But do you get what I'm saying from a movie standpoint?
This is like the sports thing. Maybe, look, I'm not going to make the argument that the movies that were the best this year happened to be directed by all men. I'm not going to make that argument, because that's stupid. Because the sample size is way too small. There's not enough women directors, and that is indicative of the sort of chauvinistic attitude that this culture seems to have in all facets of cultural life, and they happen to do in the movie business as well.
You don't think she was pointing that out, though?
I think she was, but here's what I'd like her to point out: she's Israeli. How about she goes home and talks about the only nominally democratic country left in the world that is an apartheid state? How about she go home and do that? Okay. How about she not take the easy shot? Okay. My white liberal friend.
Okay. So
rich white liberal on the stage with the whole world watching in my black dress. And how about she say something about things that are going on in her country that she doesn't want to own?
So I agree with you in part, but you don't think that is, in some sense, misdirection, in the sense of – that doesn't negate the fact that
– I think it's taking shots at people that haven't done anything wrong.
Okay. The directors –
because you're going to say, here's all the male nominees. Do you think somehow the five nominees are supposed to feel bad because they're men?
To me, I didn't take it that way. I didn't take it as a sense of her taking a shot at the directors themselves.
Think it did either. I think she's trying to make a larger point, but she's using them to make the point.
So your problem is her using them to make a point, a larger but significant point. I don't know if I necessarily have
on
a
top of
with
that. It's the easy, Aaron.
I do think it's easy. I do think
that's
it's easy.
The batting practice fastball. That's what she hit out of the park. Congratulations. Rafael Palmeiro in a dress.
I'm not saying, listen.
You hit a batting cage fastball 400 feet.
Here's what you need to do.
Step into the box against Randy Johnson and hit his slider over there in television.
Okay.
How about you do that?
And again, that's a relevant point. But staying away from the Israel issue, which is a real issue in itself, and you and I, you know, have these conversations all the time. I do agree with you that it was an easy shot, and I do think that she used the men at the expense, which I don't necessarily know if I have a problem with in a small sense. Now I do think she put the directors in a weird position. Here's my problem with the Time's Up movement.
It was a bad moment, just to finish on that, because there's poor Ron Howard standing there laughing goofily, like, what the hell is he supposed to do?
Now, I did feel bad for Ron, because Ron...
Opie Cunningham doesn't know what to say.
Because Ron didn't want any part of that, and he probably didn't know what was coming.
Well, I mean, he handled it okay.
I think he made a point
in a way that sort of hurt people that didn't need to be hurt, is, I guess, would be my point with that. There's a better way to do it.
Okay. And I think that needs to be clear. I think that needs to be clear to people who are listening, because you and I have talked about consistently, it is very unfair to at times. Well, you know, and I go both
you know,
ways on this.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just wrong about this, Aaron.
I struggle with it because I do think you are wrong in part. Because I do understand the standpoint of taking shots at your allies who actually want to be there. But you and I consistently talk about the sense that the oppressor.
Who may be
an ally at times, or you can have an ally that is still participating in an oppressive culture, whether they know it or not.
I agree with all that.
And that doesn't absolve the sin of the ally, but I think it's somewhere in the middle because I don't have a huge problem with.
Okay. I agree with what you're saying. And I understand that Natalie Portman's perspective may be that she is in an oppressed group.
Yes. She is.
Okay. Yes and no.
Yes. And that's
okay. Here's my thing. From a macro level, you are absolutely right. I have said those words. I agree with them. What the oppressed person does that offends the oppressor is absolutely registers a zero on my scale.
Yes.
Don't care. What I'm saying, though, is this is different, and it's different for a lot of reasons that you're about to get into,
yeah.
Okay? Because you have a bunch of very rich white liberals crying foul, and I'm not saying it's wrong, rightly so, against some pretty horrible people.
Yeah.
But they're going to be okay.
Yeah, and
it doesn't mean they're actually woke to what is actually happening in the world. And that's why it's and that's why I'm making the point about the Israel thing.
Yes. Okay. And you have a valid point there. And this is what I was going to get at with the Time's Up movement. I agree with it in very much large chunks, especially the sort of legal roads they want to take in helping represent women who are not like them. Like, I've heard Jessica Chastain talk about this. I've heard some different people,
right.
Some different women who are really sort of the power behind this, saying we want to help women who are not in our position because we are much better off than women who cannot represent themselves in real situations where it's easy to step away from 18 million when you have 30 million already. It's hard to step away from a situation where, as a woman, my livelihood, my family's livelihood depends on this job and I cannot leave it. That's a different situation.
Regardless of the circumstances or the environment.
Yes. And so I support it in that sense. It is very hard. And I am not, I'm not a black woman, so I cannot speak for black women, but it is very hard for me to sit here and watch. And again, I think some of this comes in the struggle of understanding what a true ally is or forming, you know, true allies across the board. It's really hard for me to sit up here and really, really, really weep for powerful white women who are now screaming that they have been treated unfair when women of color in this country have been at the bottom of the totem pole forever.
Where you been? Exactly. I completely agree. I don't, and that's the problem. Like, I'm happy. Thanks for coming to the party, pal. To quote John McClane,
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jim. Ultimately, the thing that I have, the thing that I will really take notice is, are white women or women of the majority only speaking for themselves, or are they truly speaking for all? And that is what I will need to see from the Time's Up movement.
Right. Look, a speech doesn't mean jack. Okay.
Unless you're Oprah, then it means you're running for president.
Well, oh God, please don't even get me going. Okay,
This is not a shot at the Time's Up movement. I just think that, you know,
this is neoliberalism in its
purest form. But Jim, let's not forget, you can have. You know, there is very much the reality of you can have a million women and a million allies for women storm into Washington and say, we're claiming our pussies back. We're going to be nasty women. But let's not forget, 57% of white women also voted for the man that you are all now screaming against. Like, we have not listened to certain groups in this country for a long time. And to me, unless you are willing to say to everyone, or unless you're willing to open up the table to everyone at the table and say, look, we haven't heard you, we're willing to hear you, and we want you to be part of the dialogue and change, then it's meaningless to me.
Well, because we can't tell if they're doing it for that reason or if they're just doing it to hear themselves. And I lean towards the latter.
And this, and again, for those listening,
because they got no skin in the game. Really.
And again, this is not a shot at women. This is not a shot at the Time's Up movement, because again, in its principle, in its purest principle, I do agree with it 1000%. What you and I have a problem with, and ultimately this goes into the Oprah conversation, neoliberalism in this country is a facade. Like, just because you feel like, oh my God, I recognize a poor person, I recognize a black person, I recognize an LGBTQ person, that's cool. Like, that's fine. But what does that do?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
And that's ultimately
the worst spokesperson for the kinds of problems that the Me Too and the Time's Up movement are trying to draw attention to is Oprah. She's the absolute, because she doesn't even understand that she's part of the problem. Okay? She doesn't. This is a woman that spent 30 years on TV basically rebranding and regurgitating the same nonsense that conservatives have been beating us with for 200 years. That if you work hard and you can pull yourself up by your bootstrap and be a positive person, you'll be fine. You know, conservatives have been telling us that for years, and she did the same thing. The only difference is she did it with a wink and a hug and a single tear and rolling down her cheek for the cameras. But it all starts with you. You know, if you work on yourself, you know, and now we got a litany of these self-help dopes out there that spewing gobbledygook. That doesn't address the problem.
Well, I do have a question for you.
Okay.
She is
a pure capitalist through and through. Okay. That's what she is. If you want more of that, vote for her.
Do you don't think that Oprah, in any sense, can represent something for, or you don't think she can represent something for people of different communities? And I'm not saying as a politician.
I'm not saying as a politician.
But you don't think there are certain people in this country that look at Oprah and find something?
I'm sure there are, Aaron. I mean, you're asking me a loaded question. You're trying to reel me in.
I'm just asking. I just want your general opinion on that.
She's been peddling self-help gobbledygook. That's what she's done. Read another book.
You and I.
Read this book.
I agree.
Read that book. You'll feel better and you'll be better. And someday maybe you'll have billions like me. And this is the same. This is the problem. She is the epitome of the kind of, you know, living and breathing example. Okay. That the fascists of the world, the Jeff Flakes and the Mitch McConnell and these people will throw out there and say, look, anyone can make it.
You're right.
Here's a black woman who was poor in Mississippi and she worked her tail off her whole life. And look at her now.
That's a
cool story, bro.
Now I will say
that
this
doesn't prove that our system works and is congruous with the narrative, which is that there's some sort of American dream out there that everyone can attain. No.
And I think that's that you and I agree there the most. I think the biggest notion or the biggest thing that we learn from Oprah, even having a strong cultural support in running for president, is it totally confirms the idea that this whole neoliberalism thing is a facade in a large sense.
It's a sham. It's a sham, just like Trumpism is a sham.
It's and That's exactly what I was saying. They mirror each other. They mirror each other.
Of course they do. We've been listening for 2 years to all our upper middle class white friends talking about, liberal friends talking about how horrible it is that we have a TV star running for president, and then he becomes president, and they're all jumping off
a building. Well, we got a TV star to give to fight.
And this is like the absolute worst, but the absolutely most predictable response from liberals in this country. We have a cartoon character for a president, so what we need is another TV star who's more legitimate.
Now, you and I couldn't
agree. That's what we need.
You and I couldn't agree more there. I don't think that you can dress something.
Look, I'm not trying to hammer Oprah.
No.
I'm sure that she does a lot of good work.
She does. And
okay.
And that's
but really, here's my thing,
that's
Aaron.
That's really what I was trying to ask earlier.
I can take the heat on this, but she is part of the problem, and she doesn't even know it.
And I think that is the most important part. I think it is really easy for people to miss the fact that you can be part of something and not even understand how you're part of the problem. And I just, you know, you and I texted about this earlier. You know, Vice put out a good article today, basically, you know, Oprah for 2020, I'd rather kill myself. Because it just seemingly feels like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing?
It's the upside down again.
What are
we
doing?
It's through the looking glass.
What are we doing?
We just spent 2 years listening to all these liberals complain about how he isn't qualified to be president. And what they want to do is elect a rich liberal who is not qualified to be president.
Yes.
That's exactly what they want to do.
And it's disastrous, not only for a cultural standpoint, but if you're the Democratic Party and you allow this to happen, you continue to be some of the dumbest people in all of the land. We already know that you've ignored black people for decades, but
just used them for their votes.
But now,
thank you very much.
But now if the Democratic Party takes this seriously and they put Oprah up in front of in front of their convention, knowing that they actually have some legitimate, and we're not going to argue the standpoint of what legitimate and delegitimizes a candidate, but from a career standpoint and political standpoint, if they allow this to do this, then their party is basically dead.
Well, they're salesmen. They're used car salesmen, just like the Republicans are. Because that's what we have. Hunter Thompson said that. We're a nation full of used car salesmen.
And Jim,
in a nation ruled by swine, all pigs are upwardly mobile. That's what we're seeing.
And Jim, this is ultimately the point.
Not that, please don't send me messages. I'm not calling Oprah a pig. Jeez. It's a metaphor.
You know,
okay?
Ultimately, the larger point and the larger problem that I think comes from neoliberalism, especially in this sense.
Well, capitalism is the problem.
Well, I was going to, that's ultimately what I was going to go to.
But they're inextricably tied. You're right. Well, I'm sorry. No, I'm not trying to correct you.
No. That's ultimately what I was going to lead to is, don't think that just because you smile next to someone with tan skin, or you smile next to someone who is struggling in their life.
Aaron, I've got a black friend. Does that count?
Yeah.
You do
a podcast with a black person.
I have an Asian friend.
I think what neoliberals tend to forget, and what the ultimate problem here is, just because you can smile next to someone and say, look, I've wrapped my arm around somebody for this quick picture or this quick motion or this quick moment in time, doesn't hide the fact that it doesn't change the ultimate capitalistic views that those at the top of the Democratic Party have. There is something that is mirrored, and there is a distinct parallel between the two, which you and I have driven home time and time again. It's the money. I don't think that because you tend to lean a little bit more to the left, it absolves the larger issues at hand.
No, that's exactly right.
And what we see, Jim, by
because Oprah, what oppresses by, people isn't the party. It's not conservatives and liberals. It's the cultural narrative that is produced by these political and economic elites.
And ultimately what we see with the notion of taking someone like Oprah seriously as a possible candidate for president,
God.
Like we did with Donald Trump, says we ultimately don't care about the underlying issues.
She made a speech. You know, I mean, she made a speech about, again, she made a speech where she hit a batting practice fastball out of the park. Good job. That's the easiest thing to do. Sexual harassment is bad, and we're sick of it. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm on board with that. You know, how do you feel about, you know, Far Eastern
economic policy. How about that? Give me something on that. Okay? Where are you on the Fourth Amendment? We got some issues right now with this Justice Department. Where are you on the Fourth Amendment? Illegal searches and seizures. Where are you on that? Huh?
Jim.
We're going to trade, Trump had to get the American government 101 class and he couldn't even get through it all,
Jim,
in order to understand the Constitution. We're going to do that again,
Jim.
Only this time, instead of some jackass from the Heritage Foundation, advising Trump, maybe we can get Harvey Weinstein to give her a 1 to 10 on the Constitution.
Jim,
I'm pretty sure he's familiar, Jim, with it at this point.
None of that matters as long as people feel good. We're talking about Oprah Winfrey and The Rock possibly running in 2020.
It's just beyond the pale. Here's the thing, Aaron. This is not a much ado about nothing. I got a message today from a friend of mine. He put this up, put this out there, and immediately got just bombarded by Democrats saying, "How can you dismiss this?" You know, and with racial overtones, somehow he was, dismissing her because she's black or she's a woman or something like that.
We
can't even talk about it anymore.
It's really weird because I was going to say on Twitter last night when everybody was talking about, her, the Golden Globes, and I was going to say this Sunday, I'm not voting for Oprah. That's not happening. We're not really doing this, are we? You're looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm looking at you like you're really taking this seriously. We're really going to vote in Oprah?
How about this? Let's say that, the Titanic is still sailing, according to Cam Newton, right? And it's still got to keep going.
Yeah.
And let's say that, somehow Oprah decides that she is running, okay? And let's say Bernie Sanders lives long enough to run for president,
yeah,
okay? And those two are in a primary together. Can you imagine the dance that's going to go on between the pasty white guy who's too old and from New York and
– Hey, he's not wrong with New York.
And he was born in New York, I think.
Brooklyn.
Yeah. So, and that and the black billionaire woman from Mississippi with the President Clinton story,
Yeah.
And only one of them was actually quite literally chained to a black woman in 1964. And it isn't Oprah. Can you imagine? Democrats are going to be falling over themselves not to offend anyone.
Yeah.
It would be an absolute joke.
Yeah.
And exactly what would happen. And I would be the least surprised person if it happens.
Hey,
how do you even reconcile that, Aaron?
With Donald Trump winning the presidency in 2020.
There you go.
Jackasses.
Yeah, right. No, or
these
Mike
literal
Pence,
jackasses.
Right?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Because these literal jackasses have not figured
Mike
it out.
Let's just walk Mike Pence right up Pennsylvania Avenue right now.
Well, listen,
the Blair House, I think the vice president still lives in the
according,
Blair House.
According to Fire and Fury, that could be a soon reality, Jim.
Ugh.
Listen, I'm going to say this. I haven't read the book yet. I wanted to read, I'm not going to read the book, tell you the truth. I was going to read the New York Magazine.
Why bother?
Yeah, I was going to read the New York Magazine article. To me, it doesn't matter if any of it is true. Because this is literally what Democrats want to lap up and to really lube themselves up with and just continue to attack a president who, we get it, has no business being there. But
here's the thing, Aaron, with that. The book is basically the synopsis of the 9 months or something that he spent in the White House, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Wolff. By the way, I saw Michael Wolff interviewed last night by Anderson Cooper, and he is an individual that you just want to climb into the TV and punch right in the face. He is just the most obnoxious. He is the stereotype. When conservatives talk about the liberal bias on the coast, they see his picture.
Yeah, but that's popular right now, and he knows he's at the top of the mountain.
Right, but so anyway, here's my thing with all this. I'm certain that a lot of what he put in the book is probably true.
Yeah.
At least truly. He may have embellished some, but at the core, there is there are actual interactions there, right?
Yeah.
Here's my problem. Going to go all political science-y on you here. Big surprise. Everybody drink, okay? In the 9 months that he spent there, how much of that is actually encapsulated in the book? Three?
3 months worth of interactions.
This goes back to
what about the other 6 months, Aaron?
Yeah.
I mean, oh, well, you know, what happened the other 6 out of the 9 months, you know, interspersed. Yeah. Well, they were boring and mundane because everyone was just doing the business of the, you know, look, I'm no Donald Trump. You know,
this goes back to what we were talking about.
This goes
exactly back to what we were talking about with, you know, again, it's completely different, but same sort of analogy in the sense of this goes back to the ESPN and Tom Brady story.
The same thing. It's exactly
Are we really taking 3 or 4? We know he's a madman. Like now,
you know,
it's
he's
like,
crazy.
Like, yeah. It's like, I got proof. Like, awesome. Like, again, why are we shocked? Like, why are we shocked by this? Like,
we're not.
Where's the faux anger and shock by the sense that
all the liberals on the talking, all talking heads.
Donald Trump,
sky's falling.
Donald Trump could possibly be a madman.
This proves it.
He is a misogynistic, racist, xenophobic bigot who doesn't understand anything about politics, that eats McDonald's literally 3 times a day, watches Fox News until he's 11. I'm not surprised by any of this.
No, but here's the thing, Aaron.
Why are we pretending to be shocked?
I don't know. Like when I saw the schedule of him, what his supposed schedule is, you know, where he's in the private residence till 11 a.m. on executive time. That's what I like. I like to have me some executive time. Know what I mean? You know, I'm like, okay, so he's in there eating breakfast and making phone calls and tweeting. Good.
Yeah,
okay. And then he has like real meetings and then he has a lunch and then he has more executive time. And I'm like, okay, yeah, he's watching the afternoon Fox, CNN, MSNBC. Probably got all three on.
And if you follow him on Twitter, like we sort of already get that notion. The dude tweets.
Well, see,
about
that's
11
just it. I think that's actually what's going on. I think it's that mundane, and what it tells me is, hey, you know, the president really isn't that important. You know what I mean? Like, okay, what you're telling me is 30 days out of the year, I need a president to be a strong figure when there's a crisis or there's a meeting or there's, you know, about 30 days out of the year. That's what I need. The other 11 is pretty mundane.
He's a figurehead.
So I, you know, the bureaucracy runs the government. Oh, tell me something else I didn't already know. Okay. Am I pleased that he is within an arm's length of the nuclear football? No, I'm not. I'm not happy about that. I'm quite confident someone will tackle him before he actually opens it up and starts a war.
You know,
like maybe that's misplaced confidence.
I'm glad
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
I'm glad you said that, Jim, because from your Oprah rant to this, I mean, I basically had come to the notion that you are a Donald Trump fan. You probably have a whole color set of Make America Great hats in your house. And you hate women. That's basically
the you know what I watched the other day because it's a guilty pleasure. Mm-hmm. Armageddon.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Time to embrace the horror, boys.
Talk. Listen, if you want to talk about a real president, I don't go to Armageddon. I go to Independence Day.
Oh yeah.
Well, I go to Independence Day. That is my president.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, this was a fun one, Jim.
Oh my God!
I'm glad I finally got.
Here's my final thing on the whole. All these people collecting Golden Globes and thinking that they're part of society.
Yeah,
it's a Bruce Springsteen line. A rich man in a poor man's shirt don't make much for tragedy.
Okay, there's truth in that.
Okay, so you know, wonderful. You've gotten our attention. Let's talk to people that are, you know, really suffering every day and is, you know, they're trapped in generational suffering.
You have no optimism in the sense of you don't think anybody on this sort of larger platform can draw attention to things that people haven't spoken to before.
Because you
sound like Ta-Nehisi Coates a little bit.
Well, I know, but I think that they can, but to what end?
Yeah.
Until you start talking about systemic change, you're whistling in the wind, okay?
It's a nice trend. It's a nice hashtag.
Right. In fact, you're pissing into the wind. We used to call it shoveling crap against the tide.
Hey,
you know?
Hey, listen, some people like that.
Okay.
Call it rain,
yeah,
call
I
it
mean,
not.
Right. Like, right. Dig your hole, man. And as soon as you're done, there's another one to dig.
I was talking about the other thing.
Thanks, Pink Floyd.
Talking about the other thing, but never mind.
No, I know, but you know what I'm saying, though.
I do.
You know, I just...
And again, for those listening, I want real substance.
I think about this. Oprah Winfrey gives a car to everyone in her audience, right? Everybody's wondering, well, isn't this one? Everyone, you get a car. You get a car. You get a car. You know what I start thinking?
how are they going to pay that gift tax?
Well, that, but the first thing I think of is probably everyone in that audience drove there. They probably already have a car because they had to buy tickets to go to this stupid show. So they obviously have some disposable money.
Damn, dog, you are heated with Oprah.
Okay. And then I start thinking, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just being a jerk. And maybe she populated the audience with, you know, people that are in dire straits that have written her letters and told her how much they adore her and they wish they could come. And good for her. She sent them tickets and she flew them out there and she gave them a car. Exactly what you're saying. How are they going to pay for that? You're going to be able to afford insurance? What are they doing? Okay. How about we find a way to get them a living wage and then they can buy their own damn car? You know, how about we stop paying people to clean toilets, you know, $10 an hour and start paying them $30 an hour because that job sucks.
Jim, you're a socialist and I won't have it on this podcast.
You're right. To a certain degree, I am because this system sucks. It doesn't make sense and it doesn't work.
And that, you know, those are all jokes aside, you know, I mean, the conversation. No, I hear you. Yeah, but.
But you know what I'm saying?
Like, I do.
What Oprah got out of it was
ratings, you know, and she looks good.
Three million more views the next week.
Yeah.
Because she's right up there, man. She's a capitalist.
It's not real substance. That's all we're asking for. We want real conversation and real dialogue because those are things that actually initiate real change.
Get in the fight.
Yes.
You know, that's what Michael Brown's daughter. Not Michael Brown.
Eric Garner.
Eric Garner's daughter just died of a heart attack at 27. Right?
Yeah.
How many problems can we identify in society that she suffered from? Bad nutrition. You know, stressed out all the time. You know, why do black people live shorter lives than white people? Because they die at 27 of a heart attack, something we wouldn't accept. We shouldn't accept in this country. You know, of the 20 richest countries in the world, we have the highest mortality, child mortality rate. It's obscene. Why are we okay with this? You know, Eric Garner's daughter, whose name escapes me, right? Erica. She was in the fight. Erica. How could I forget? You know, she's in the fight. That's what I'm saying.
And she died fighting.
And she died in the fight. Oprah made a speech to a bunch of rich assholes. I'm sorry, I'm not moved. Get in the fight.
That's all we want. That's all we're asking for. And that, to tell you the truth, that's what a real ally is. I think it's a good spot to end this week's podcast. For those who haven't abandoned ship, we appreciate you listening.
Yeah, they're never listening again. Oh, God.
We appreciate you listening. Jim's not a racist. Jim doesn't hate women.
Well, maybe I am, and I don't know it. I don't know. Maybe we all are.
I can stand by you. I can stand by you and say that confidently. Just think about it. Jesus. I mean, we're at this point. We hope you enjoy. We'll be back next week. I'm Aaron Palat. He's Jim Heenahan. This is Carolina Knicks Day Podcast.